seconds early.
Do it.
So welcome to the Planning and Community Development Committee meeting for Monday, July 19th, 2021. I welcome my colleagues, Verna Seal and Thomas McLeod, fellow council members, and I welcome staff. And we're going to start with an application for lodging tax fund days and review that with Brandon. So take it away, Brandon.
Good evening. For the record, Brandon Miles, Business Relations Manager for the City of Tukwila and the City's lead for our tourism program. Before the City Council tonight, or before the committee tonight, is a lodging tax request in the amount of $10,000 to sponsor the Rave Green Run, which is scheduled for September 19th. This will be the third year it's been in the City of Tukwila. It was in the community in 2018 and 2019. 2020, it became a virtual event due to COVID-19. So we are looking for ways to reintroduce the Puget Sound to the Tukwila region. So any event that we can bring to the South Central District and to the city is a good way for us to get people back into the community and remind them about Tukwila. So we're thinking that we could have attendance here between 600 and 800. As again, the Rave Foundation is the nonprofit arm of the Seattle Sounders. So there's a component of this which includes the Seattle Sounders. So the Lodging Tax Advisory Committee considered this request and recommended approval and forwarded it to the City Council for final action. So happy to answer any questions the committee members may have.
Okay, let's start with Verna this time. So Verna, questions, comments?
No, thank you. No, I think this is great. I think you're right. This is one way to get more people to our region. It will probably be heavily attended because people are missing things like this. So I have no questions. I think it's great. I'm in full support.
All right, Tom.
I have no questions and I am in full support.
And I am as well. So, Brandon, good work as usual, and we are recommending that you proceed, and that this will go to the consent agenda at our next regular meeting. All right, thanks again. The next item that we have on our agenda, I'm flipping there right now, it's the update on the code enforcement and rental housing. And so this is just for us, this is for us to understand ongoing issues that are going on right now. So Kia, are you going to present on this? It looks like you are.
Yes, hi everyone. Thank you very much for having me today. So for the record, I am Kia Shagna, Code Enforcement Officer and Rental Housing Inspector. And just like you said, I'm going to give you a brief summary on current code enforcement activity as well as what's going on with the rental housing program as well. So as of July 13th, code enforcement had 186 open code enforcement cases, most of which are permit related. So there's 123 of those. Permit related would include building construction without permits, grading or clearing activities, tree removal, landscape modification, things of that nature. 25 cases were related to garbage and rubbish, 17 related to weeds and overgrowth, and 11 to sensitive areas. Sensitive areas being wetlands, streams, river shoreline, buffers, and steep slopes. We also have 6 cases that are actively being appealed as well. Now, many cases are straightforward and pretty easy to resolve. Some contributing factors that impact resolution times would include, property owner responsiveness, the severity of the violations, property owner resource availability, availability of community support and resources in some cases, and property owner mobility. Some cases are a bit more challenging and time consuming. So attachment B details some examples of some of our more challenging cases that we have. Now moving on to the rental licensing and inspection program. So as of July 13th, we have 4,311 registered rental units, 572 active rental licenses. All the program late fees for 2020 and 2021 up through September 30th were waived in response to the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. And then as of July 13, 61 properties have yet to renew for their 2021 license. Now, we are looking to do a rental inspection deadline extension. So in addition to the annual licensing, you know, they have to get inspections every 4 years. And for properties with up to 4 units, they can use a city inspector. So as of right now, we have 1,810 rental units that are due for their inspection. So that includes the inspections that were due in 2020, the ones that are now due in 2021, and then past due, ones that were due prior to that. And so we are looking to extend, offer a 2-year extension to all inspection deadlines. And so by extending the inspection deadlines, the idea is that we'll be able to eliminate the backlog and really focus on the properties that would have been the most overdue without an extension. And so happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Okay, let's take these issues one at a time. So for the code enforcement issue, Tom, do you have any questions about that part of it?
You know, I may want to ask a question later that will come back to that, so I'm going to say no for now.
Okay. And Verna, any questions that have to do with the code enforcement? I see we've got some examples here. Do you have any questions about those pages that show these, I count three places that you can see on page 15, 17, and 19 that give you an example of, these are all three of these key, are they all being appealed?
Appealed.
Or are they just examples?
Nora, I'm not entirely sure which one of those are appeals. I know that at least some of them are, but I don't know that all of them are.
No, like for the example, the firing range is, we're being very cooperative. They have a big issue out there, but we've gotten great responsiveness from them. The one with the illegal Airbnb, he's been going through multiple appeals, but we assume that we will prevail on that one.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So, Verna, do you have any other questions about that?
To these, and but I just it's a question in general and don't need an answer tonight, but they're the property you're gonna know. Nora's gonna go, oh yeah, the one that is still there, oh goodness, by my old house up south 130th, you make a right there, I think it's Jackie Dupree's house, I think that's who the owner is. It's been there as long as I have been here. So there's that. I know we've had some successes with, because remember we had like a list of, there was like a dozen houses or different things and they were different. But, you know, just everybody asks me all the time, how come that house is still there like that? So maybe, you know, digging up some of these examples that we've had in the past and just kind of give us a kind of an update where we're at. I think there were some bankruptcy issues. But I know a lot of the ones that we have had issues with are great, but it's just that one particular one that I'm curious about. As far as anything else here, I don't have any questions. Oh, I was very long-winded in saying I don't have any except for that one. So yeah, go ahead, Kathy.
So, Verna's asking for an update on some of these ongoing issues that have been going on for years. Tom, Verna, is there consensus to ask Nora to bring this information back to us at a different committee meeting?
Yeah, no rush. No rush at all. Just, you know what I mean? It could even be an email to the full council, because I'm sure the full council might have the same questions. And this was in a packet couple of years ago, I want to say. Remember, you guys know what I'm talking about, and Laurel will certainly know what I'm talking about. So
I do. Of course, I figured everything would be resolved while I was away.
Which something
I understand.
Well, maybe you really need to come back here. Maybe just an update to the full council at some point via email.
I could certainly do that.
Yeah, does that sound right? I like the idea of getting an email with some updates about that, and then give staff time to prepare it and everything. Okay. So that's the request out of that part of this. And then we'll go on to the rental license program. And I'll start with you, Verna. Do you have questions?
No. I have a couple more questions.
Okay, coming back to you.
When it comes to code enforcement, how many code enforcement officers are there? Is there two?
Right. Yes. Right now it's, Kia and Jim Toole. And then we have a part-time admin support in the rental housing program and part of a permit tech who also helps us out with admin.
And you mentioned the number of rentals that need inspection. You mentioned the number of code enforcement violations. So, we see people post stuff on Facebook they would like the city to look at, and some of the stuff falls under code enforcement. And then you talked about giving a pass this year, so then we would catch up later. People have kind of a year or a two-year pass on the rental licenses. Can our current staff level accomplish all of this?
Well, luckily, PCD has unfrozen a position for us. So we actually were in second interviews with an additional code enforcement officer today. And we had three really good candidates that were sort of trying to figure out who's going to be the best fit. So we do think that we will have more staff resources to bring to bear on this.
Okay. So soon you could be up to three.
That is the goal. Yes.
Okay. That's great. And then, because, like a trash pickup up on TIB, and people will post pictures of businesses and we see stuff. I think that's a good example. Businesses that aren't just keeping their area clean enough, mm-hmm. And would we be able to be enforcing some of that stuff?
Like everything, there's always more than we can do. So we need to prioritize and understand the council's priorities on that as well. Certainly the life safety, the unpermitted construction has been a very high priority for us. But then, once we get down to that second tier, we can talk about where we should, focus.
And what you just said right there about the prioritization, mm-hmm. is that something we can share with the community so they understand that we give priority to the life safety issues?
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder if that would give them a perspective that, yes, it's important what they're telling us about, but maybe we run out of resources just dealing with the life safety issues. And we do want to get to the other stuff, but I would agree with what you're saying there.
Yeah, we can certainly, maybe that's something that we'd want to bring back to committee is sort of here's how we understand our prioritization. But if, we want to move some things up, we're really concerned about tall weeds because of fire danger or something like that, we could look at.
I think that would be fair. That'd be mm-hmm. fair to bring it back. Let's talk about the priorities in our code enforcement. That's a reasonable conversation to have.
Sure.
If my other council members would agree.
Yeah, and I also think that some of that dovetails with parks, right? Because some of this stuff overlaps. Even though it is a code enforcement issue, there might be a parks component or a public works component when it comes mm-hmm. to garbage, when it comes to, I know one of the sources of contention for the council was a lot of the trash cans are overflowing. Now, where are the trash cans? What are the trash cans? So there's this kind of intertwined thing going on, I think, with the different departments, too. But I understand what you're saying. I mean, life safety, you can't build something on this slope because it's going to fall down. Those are number one priorities. Or this house is, people should not be living here. That's a priority. But mm-hmm. you're right, Tom. I do. I think, people have this perception that we've got this team of a dozen people going out, whatever, but we can't do that. So, but that's a valid point.
Okay, I yield back.
So, I want to have a conversation with my fellow council members and also with staff about this. And that is that life safety, of course, needs to come first. But there's a quality of life issue that is really important. And when we go out into the community, and if they're having problems with their neighbor and it's affecting their quality of life, it has to come second. But we really can have it seems unreasonable to me to have a code enforcement department that only has enough bandwidth to address life safety issues. And so I think as council members and staff, we need to keep that in the forefront at all times. So I'm not really sure that three, if it's enough, it might be, Nora, that might be fine. Mm-hmm. But we just need to keep this in front of ourselves. The fact that this is quality of life. This is livability, which is one of our foundational things that we are looking at in Tukwila, is making this a livable community. And so just going back and revisiting this and making sure that things are being addressed, I think is really important. I don't have anything specific right now, but so I wanted to bring that up once again. All right. So should we move on to the rental inspection? All right. And let's see. Rental licensing, Tom.
Oh.
No, wait. I'm like trying to go back and forth. Verna.
Rental housing. Yes. Yes. I don't have any particular questions. Although I'm just interested in the virtual rental inspection beta program. Can you just elaborate a little bit more on that?
Yes, of course. So just as it sounds, we created a guide that kind of walks people through. It's an illustrated guide that shows them what the expectation is. They would need a handheld device, laptop or smartphone. It was conducted via Zoom, and the inspection would be recorded. I would provide verbal cues kind of on what I needed to see. The virtual guide helped as well because it let them know, you know, all the areas I would need to look at. I gave them kind of a spiel in the beginning about, okay, I may ask you at some point to stop, to slow down, to please pan left. Can you get a little closer? I need to see the window seal, you know. So that kind of broke down how the process worked. And it worked out pretty well. The very first one, you know, has a little bit of few bumps along the way, but I found it to be a helpful tool. The issue is not all properties are appropriate for the virtual inspections. You know, especially the older ones that have more issues where we really want to make sure that we're catching everything. You know, a small newer condo or, you know, a condo that's in great shape that we've never had any problems with, I mean, that went super easy. But, you know, properties that have failed in the past or were overdue for inspections, we didn't feel those as ideal candidates for the virtual program.
Perfect. That's exactly what I wanted to hear.
So, okay.
Because I'm like, yeah, and I could totally see if you've had no issues, then that's great. I mean, I applaud you guys for being so, what's the word? The word. It's genius, right? Mm-hmm. There's a word there I can't think of. It's been a long day. But that's what I was worried about. So those ones that have failed or ones that we know have been issues, then that's, I just wanted to make sure we weren't going here. Hey, you know,
yes,
and they're in somebody else's apartment. Right? Okay. So perfect. Thank you.
Tom.
How many of those virtual appointments have you done?
Not that many, about four or five. So a lot of people were a bit hesitant, more, I think, out of insecurity of like, I'm not sure that I can do the technology. So there was some apprehension on that. And I also think there was a lot of people who looked at it as just an opportunity to not have to do their inspection yet, you know, so that chose to just postpone.
I like that idea. So I applaud your creativity. Thank you. I'm done.
Okay, thank you. I'm not sure if I think that's the most ideal way because you might miss something, but it sounds to me like if you're really careful with it and you're like, okay, so we're going to do brand new properties, ones that have, you know, passed inspections with flying colors and so on and so forth, then maybe it's great, right? Because in the past, we've talked about like if of just waiting inspections after a certain amount of time. So it probably does have its place. So, yeah. Okay, and Tom, you had something else.
So would you do a house inspection virtually for the very first time, or would this be once you have something already on record?
Ideally, it would be something once we already have something on record. And especially with a house, we really want to make sure we're catching, you know, any potential life safety issues.
I have a rental house in Tukwila, and I would feel comfortable doing it like with my smartphone and showing you things you wanted to see or through the house. So, yeah, I think it's a good idea.
Verna, did you have anything else?
No, I think it's great. So, I don't have any questions.
It sounds to me like you're handling it well, and you have an idea of like what the parameters should be with that virtual inspection. So,
thank you. We're doing our best.
Yeah, you guys are doing a great job.
It's always good to hear. It's been a challenging year.
Yeah. Sorry about all the dinging and stuff. It's just
mine do the same thing.
Dinging and chirping and whatever, tweeting and whatever else. All right, good. So this gives us some time to talk about the resolution on the transit-oriented development, which I think the last place it was in the Planning Commission. They probably spent some time on it. Is that right, Nora? So and Meredith?
Yes.
So here we go.
And we recognize that it's a lot to go through. So, you know, I think Meredith will give a good overview, and we can certainly drill down where we need to do that.
I think we need to drill down on all of it. I just, having read it mm-hmm. through, I'm going to just go right to the point. Having looked at it, we need to drill down on all. All right, thank you.
Okay, hello everybody. I can start by just sharing my screen. Okay. Can everyone see that? Yeah. Okay. So for the record, this is Meredith Sampson, Associate Planner in the Department of Community Development. Tonight I'll be talking about the Transit-Oriented Development Housing Strategies Plan. The purpose of tonight's meeting is to give an overview of the plan, a background, what the plan focuses on. I'll talk about what we heard during the outreach process, and I'll go over the plan's recommendations and the recommended amendments that were made by Planning Commission. You're right, they did spend a very substantial amount of time kind of going over this, and it's a lot of information. And just a reminder that the adoption of this plan doesn't actually implement any code changes. After adoption, the staff will look for opportunities to incorporate the recommendations from the plan into zoning code and policy updates. Okay, so I'm going to keep the background brief because I know it's all in your pockets, but the grant deliverables can be broken down into two distinct sections. The first is a collaborative product called the Subregional Housing Action Framework, and it was a combined effort with Auburn, Burien, Federal Way, Kent, Renton, and Tukwila. And this product kind of sets the stage for the second product, which is the Tukwila-specific TOD Housing Strategies Plan that we are going to discuss. The direction of this plan is to identify pathways to increase residential building capacity while minimizing displacement of existing residents in the TIB Station area. So the TIB Station area is shown here in this map. It's a half-mile walkshed around the light rail station, and it's kind of outlined here and shaded in gray. It does not include the parcels that are in SeaTac, only the ones that are in Tukwila. The plan is kind of looks at existing code and housing policies and at what can be done to make housing development of different types more feasible. There is a feasibility analysis done in the plan that kind of lays the framework for the recommendations and shows what different things the city can do and can control to change to kind of set the stage for more housing development in this area. The creation of this plan is consistent with the vision in the TIB district element and the goals in the housing element of Tukwila's comprehensive plan. And the plan's three objectives are higher density development, anti-displacement and community stabilization, and station area planning and infrastructure. And these three objectives are supported by what we heard during the outreach process and just the general requirements of the grant. Public engagement has been a priority throughout the process. There's been a joint effort between the consultant and city staff. And I do believe I've actually briefed committee about the public outreach that had been done so far back in March. The engagement process began with the creation of a public engagement plan that took Tukwila's equity policy into consideration when it was developed. Engagement was conducted through stakeholder interviews, focus groups, and a virtual community open house. Stakeholders involved in the focus groups and interviews included residents, faith-based organizations, city staff, housing developers that had experience in Tukwila, cultural organizations, and Foster High School students. And then 13 interviews and 4 focus groups were conducted, and feedback from these was used to inform the recommendations. The city also hosted a virtual community open house on May 12th to kind of talk about the findings and recommendations in the draft plan and to solicit feedback and answer questions. 23 people attended, not including the staff that were facilitating. And people who participated included residents, people who work in Tukwila, housing developers, students, and council members. Key themes that we heard throughout the process were that participants were surprised by some of the data that was shown, especially the breakdown of cost burden renters by race, and that Black and Hispanic renters are disproportionately more cost burdened than other racial groups in Tukwila. We heard that there were not enough affordable multi-bedroom units. We heard that parking requirements for new development can quickly make a project infeasible due to the cost and space they take up, but that it's also, parking is also just a balancing act, and it's important to think about the mobility needs in the area that you're looking at. Open space was brought up by the attendees and that it's very important in urban areas and can contribute to a higher quality of life. We heard support for making the permitting process easier, specifically for faith-based institutions to build affordable housing. We heard that lack of a housing and affordable options is a regional issue, and if not addressed, it will just continue to become more dire. And finally, we heard that from many participants that they love living in Tukwila and they have a desire to continue living here without being displaced. To go back a second. A public hearing with the Planning Commission was held on June 24th, and the Planning Commission made amendments to the draft housing strategy plan and forwarded the amended document to City Council. One public comment letter was received by the Department of Commerce and is attached as an attachment in your packet, and no members of the public provided a public comment at that meeting. So the draft COD Housing Strategies Plan outlines 18 recommended actions to meet the plan's objectives. All of these actions are for the TIB Station area, with several of the recommended actions extending citywide. So I'm going to go through them one by one, kind of showing the recommended language amendments that were made by Planning Commission. Okay, starting with recommendations that support the objective of encouraging higher density development. This starts on page 23 of your packets. And if you're following along just from the draft plan, which is attachment A, that's on page 57 of that. So recommendation A1 is to consider modifying the unit mix requirement for new housing development. We heard through the outreach process that more multi-bedroom units were desired to meet the needs of Tukwila's residents. And the current code limits the number of studio units that can be built. And the recommendation is to consider instead to require that 25% of the units built have 2 or more bedrooms, so limiting the number of studios. The feasibility analysis showed that the adjustment would likely not impact the financial feasibility of new housing development and would produce the intended result of creating more multi-bedroom units in newly developed housing. So the Planning Commission recommendation for this The Planning Commission recommendation was to keep this as written.
I'm going to stop right here. So, so my fellow council members, if you have questions that you want, you might want to ask them right at the time, since there's 18 of these, so that you don't lose it. So, just raise your hand or turn on your mic, and I'll know if you have questions. So, doing the math, there's 18 of these, and we have like about 40 minutes, so that's a few minutes each. So. So there you go, Tom. And then
First of all, one quick question. On your collaborative cities, why was CTAC not in there?
CTAC actually didn't opt in to participate in this grant until it was offered the second time. So, yeah.
Okay. And then second, can we speak in support of something right now? Like, for instance, I like this idea of more 2 and 3 bedroom units. Is that appropriate to share that now? I see the Planning Commission wanted it kept as written.
Mm-hmm.
Did they say why that was?
I think looking through the feasibility analysis and what we heard during outreach, it kind of checked both boxes.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Rona, can you just repeat what you said about the affordability or feasibility? You said something like, so the 25%, if we required the 25% of new units, you said?
So we're changing the requirement from limiting the number of studios to requiring at least 25% of the new units be 2 or 3 bedrooms. Very little impact on the financial feasibility of a project. So what would produce the intended result, yes.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So my question is, when it says keep as written, does that mean keep as written right here under next steps?
This is copied right from the plan. So yeah, keep as written here in the next step and keep everything that's in the plan as was proposed.
So this means that keep as written means keep as what's under next steps. So do you have a comment about that then?
No, thanks for clarifying. I didn't quite connect that. So we would be then leaning towards less studios, more 2 and 3 bedrooms. Okay, thank you.
And you're in support of that?
Yep.
Okay, we got it. On to the next one.
Recommendation A2 is to consider establishing a uniform parking requirement of 1 stall per unit in the TIB station area, so that's half mile walk shed only. The current code requires 2 stalls per unit, regardless of number of bedrooms in the high density residential zoning district. And then in the neighborhood commercial center zoning district, it requires 1 stall per unit plus 0.5 stalls for each unit with more than 1 bedroom. So adjusting this parking requirement in the TIB station area would increase the feasibility for new multifamily development, housing development within that half mile walk shed. And we heard through outreach that current parking requirements can quickly make a project infeasible, but also that parking ratios are a balancing act and it's really important to think about the mobility needs of that specific area you're talking about. So the Planning Commission recommendation was to adjust the language to reduce ratios to 1 stall per unit in HDR and NCC zones for studios and 1 bedroom apartments, and then have it be 2 stalls per unit for 2+ bedroom units. So they kept kind of a portion of the original recommendation.
Vern, I'll start with you.
I got notes in all different kinds of places. Because on page 24 in our packet, it says, it gives a little, in the off the slides gives a little bit more thought process behind the Planning Commission. It says, the Planning Commission recommendation and reasoning, adjust recommendation to reduce parking ratios to 1 stall per unit for studio and 1 bedroom and 2 stalls for 2 bedroom. 1 parking stall for 2 bedroom units would not fit the community needs. I just kind of wrote, I'm not so sure about that, but that is my only comment there. But it doesn't look like that's, is that reflected in here?
In, like it's a Planning Commission reasoning or?
Well, it says 1 parking stall for a 2 bedroom unit will not fit the community needs. So 1 and 2 bedroom, 2 stalls, I got it. Okay, see, so originally we thought that we would say 1 parking stall for a 2 bedroom, but this is saying, keep the 2 stalls for a 2 bedroom. And I'm saying, I'm not so sure. So to me, I would like to hear a full council discussion on this one.
All right, Tom.
I moved into an older community that was built in the early 80s up in Sunwood, and it has pretty good parking. So you can go visit somebody and actually find a spot to park a car. So I tend to favor more parking because I've tried to visit people myself in areas where there's not enough parking and it can be pretty difficult. So I would tend to want to go with the more parking just as a quality of life issue. I think it really is a big deal. And I'd like, for instance, the Bellwether development. I'd be very curious to see how that plays out when they're all done and people move in and they're actually trying to park cars around there. So I'm for the more parking.
All right, thank you. And Verna, you have your hand up again.
Yeah, just really quick. And I do agree with that, what Tom just said in general, But we're talking, this is right around like the light rail station. We're talking that, you know, in my head, a lot of people that are going to live in Bellwether, for example, rely on public transportation and may or may not have a car to park. So that's, I know we've gone round and round on this one before. So that's why I just wanted to say that's why I'm thinking the way I am thinking, because of that, because it's in that space around the light rail, because this is what this is about. This isn't meaning we change this for the full city, correct? This is just that area.
Tom?
Well, I think Bellwether is in that half mile radius, and I think they will own a car and then use light rail. So I think people will happen, especially if their 16-year-old kid gets a car.
Okay, thank you. So my thoughts on this is I don't really want to make any sort of recommendation until we see what happens at Bellwether. Bellwether is our litmus test, because it is one stall per unit. And I think we're going to get a pretty good idea of how this is working out in our community. And Bellwether, I think, is going to be done by the very early 2022. And that'll be really good. I'm so glad we're going to be able to see that. Because parking can be a barrier to access for people to be in apartments. If you've got somebody who is working cleaning houses and somebody else is working on a job site and they've got kids, they need to have two cars. They're not able to take public transportation to those jobs. And I know personally that anecdotally, personally, people that that's a barrier to being able to have a rent an apartment is lack of parking. So, but we don't know the answer. So my comment is I want to see what happens at Bellwether before I really make a decision. Because Brian, you could be right. Tell me, it could be somewhere in the middle. Not sure. So those are my remarks regarding that. Okay, so that's the end of the comments for that. That's a big deal. That's a big one. Nora.
I would like to make this one complication is this was funded through a grant, which does have a deadline for us to adopt a work product. So some of these things may need to just have some additional language saying that you might revisit it based on future information, but I don't think we can put off any adoption until next year under the grant terms.
Okay, but I'm going to say this is a big deal and quality of life. So let's have that discussion with a bigger community, which we will anyway. Verna, looks like maybe you're speaking.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say this will be one that needs full council discussion, of course.
Absolutely. I totally agree. So this is one of the biggest deals right here. And so we've gone through that one now. So the next thing is the modifying units, unit mix requirement. Oh, wait, I'm going the wrong direction. Excuse me. I have to go. And you are doing, okay, I'm getting confused. Take it away, because we're on to the next slide.
Yes, we're on A3, which is to modify parking standards for 4:1 development. Properties that are in the opt-in to the urban renewal overlay allow for higher building heights, but when they opt into this, that also requires them to build structured parking, which can constrain development. So the feasibility study shows that structured parking costs more to build and can make housing development infeasible. And the amount of units that could be added to a development by saving space, not having surface parking, doesn't actually add enough to offset the cost of building structured parking itself. So the Planning Commission recommendation is to keep this recommendation and just add some clarity to one of the next steps to specify what requirements are being addressed. It was a little bit vague originally, and they just made it clear that we're talking specifically about the structured parking requirement.
Verna?
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Yeah, I'm okay with this one.
Okay, Tom?
So this is saying they would not build a carport, right? That's the type of structure we're talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, I'm fine with it.
I am too. So, and we can talk about this more. Maybe somebody has a good reason why it should be something different. But right now, it looks fine to me as well. All right, so we're on to the next slide.
Yes. Recommendation A4 is to adjust the recreational space requirements. The current code requires 400 square feet of recreation space for each unit in the high density residential zone, and then 200 square feet per unit in the regional commercial and neighborhood commercial center zone. The feasibility analysis shows that if city revises the recreation space requirements to be 10% of the lot area instead of a per unit amount, it would allow for higher density development and would increase development feasibility in the TIB station area, where on some lots there just isn't enough room to meet the current parking recreation space requirements and build enough units for it to pencil out. So during outreach, we did hear that people really do value recreation space, and this adjustment would make it more scalable to the lot size, and then we could also set a minimum square footage that was needed for maybe some of the smaller lots. And the Planning Commission recommendation is to keep this one as written.
Okay, Tom, what do you think?
I am all for relaxing that standard, the recreational space. I think we've had discussions before that, and the discussion was centered around it being a little bit too much. So I would be all for relaxing it.
All right. Thank you. Verna.
Yeah, and this makes sense to me because I think we've got one development that just has, I mean, we talked about this because this is why they can't get it off the ground, because of these restrictions. So I think this is creative, and I think this will work. So I'm okay with this one.
Yeah, I agree. It sounds good. You've got some ways to mitigate it or to do this differently, but to still have place for kids to play. So I agree. All right. So what is the next?
Recommendation A5 is to reduce step back requirements. The feasibility analysis shows that if setback requirements for properties were removed or reduced, it would increase the development feasibility. And a way to modify that would be to require that buildings are step back starting on the fourth or fifth floor rather than on the second or third, like our current code requires. The recommendation from Planning Commission is to strike this recommendation from the plan. And their reasoning is that removing or altering the setback requirements, especially for parcels that maybe border the low density residentially zoned properties, might create an abrupt transition in density and affect quality of life.
Okay, so I think we're at, starting with Tom. Sorry if it was supposed to be Verna. I'm mixing up. Tom.
I'm not so sure I understand this with regard to quality of life, but this is saying that right now, our current code at the second floor would require a setback, and we're seeing here now we would go maybe to the fourth or fifth floor for a setback. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. Some parts of our code, depending on where it is, require second or third floor. It's not just one second floor or third floor. It's kind of all over, different in our code, but second or third floor, moving to fourth or fifth floor.
And the Planning Commission's, well, I don't know what they meant by strike recommendation from plan.
They would like to remove this. Their recommendation is to remove this from the plan and just keep the setback requirements the way they are.
On the second floor?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know that I have a real strong thought on this. Does the city, the administration, have a recommendation as to why you'd want to leave it on the second or allow them to go to the fourth? And what do the developers want?
I mean, I think the developers, from the development feasibility standpoint, they can get more units if you have the step back start on the fourth or fifth floor instead. So it just makes it financially more feasible. But I think the Planning Commission was thinking, especially for the properties that are in the HDR zone, that kind of border low density residential, having that step back on the second or third floor is important just for so you're not kind of having a very tall building right next to you. This is a wall.
Okay. I yield back.
All right, Verna.
Yeah, this is one where I need more discussion. And I think when we get it to the council level, I might even need a picture to go with it.
Yeah.
I understand what they're trying to do, but I also understand the need. I mean, the reason why we're doing this is because we're trying to get a plan together. These are housing strategies. And so before I say I agree with striking this, I think I need more, I need a picture. I need some examples and a picture. So I think this one, you know, I honestly, Kathy, I don't think, you know, I think we should move this forward without any recommendation, but we can talk about that at the end. But I think this is one where I need more to make a decision.
You know, I like that idea. We can have a little bit of discussion right now, but really the decision is going to be made with full council. But this does give staff a kind of an idea of where we're going.
Especially because these recommendations were developed from reaching out to communities, to developers. You know, this just didn't come out of the air. So before I would completely strike something, I'd want to have more information. That's, I guess, what I'm saying.
So would the committee consider a request for like maybe some drawings of what this looks like? Because I don't even have a visualization for it. Are you guys, Tom, Verna, good with showing examples of what that would look like? That would be, okay, so could you add that to the packet when it goes to the full count, the COW?
Yes.
Okay, so that's our outcome from this one, is that we want some examples.
A thought. So the development in SeaTac that's kitty corner from the light rail, I was seeing that over the weekend. I thought, wow, that's all the way out to the sidewalk and going to be like several floors up. So if you drive by, take a look at that one and give it some perspective. How many floors up are they going right out at the sidewalk edge?
Yeah, I guess the question is that a potential of being right next to somebody's house? So all of a sudden, you know, their yard is wiped out by a shower. I don't know. We need to see some.
But I think that's the concept we're talking about here. Is that correct, Meredith?
It is. This is talking about solely about setbacks from the floors, not about setbacks from the property line. But I can kind of bring more information about what the setbacks are also and include that in the